music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, how you doing? And welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. And on behalf of the entire Kelly Alexander Show team, we wish you a very happy new year and all the best for the months ahead. We hope they're filled with happiness, health, and success for you and your family and friends. This week on the show, we actually take a look back at some of our favorite interviews and segments from the last year. We had such an amazing time covering these topics and stories that we want to revisit them again. Enjoy the show, and thank you so much for your continued support. We really appreciate it. We are humbled and completely honored to welcome our next guest to the show. She's a member of the best-selling female group of all time, who, amongst other things, have sold over 65 million albums around the world, won Grammy Awards, and created hit songs like No Scrubs, Unpretty, and Creep. Rosanda Chili Thomas of TLC, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Good morning.
So we are so thrilled to have you on the show. And I know that the last month specifically has been crazy with the success of your Kickstarter campaign to crowdfund your final TLC album. Have you been able to take it all in, Chili, like all the love that your fans have for you and T-Boz and Left Eye?
You know, it is hard to take it all in because it's so unbelievable, you know, especially during the times when, you know, we haven't had an album out in a long time. And, you know, people can tend to forget you, especially, you know, here in America. It's like, you know, you always have to prove yourself over and over again, even though you've done some great things in your career. You all, it's like starting over every time. And so when we decided to go this route with Kickstarter and involve our fans and stuff like that, you know, we were very nervous because we didn't know what was going to happen. We definitely wanted people to go to the site and, you know, listen to our video to explain why we wanted to do this and, you know, why we chose to take this direction over, you know, going other places. And so the turnout has been tremendous, and a lot of our peers have stepped up and pledged. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I have to ask you about that. What does it feel like knowing that the boys from New Kids on the Block have donated, from what I understand, like $20,000, and then Katy Perry, $5,000 as well? What does it mean to you to have that support, not only from your fans that obviously love you guys to pieces, but you know, your peers in the industry, and also like Katy Perry, she's at the top of her game right now.
Mm-hmm. She is. Oh, she totally is. You know, it just means a whole lot to us, and it definitely motivates us even more to go in the studio and come up with something super amazing. You know, I think that the reason we've been able to have some longevity in this very hard business is it has a lot to do with the lyrical content of the music we put out. And it's things that people can relate to, whether you're a guy or a girl, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's about life. And almost every song is like that, you know. Then we make it fun too, so it's with a jamming beat, and then we make up TLC dances that everybody wants to learn. So, you know, that same format when we record this last album is gonna stay. We're not gonna break that mold by any means.
Were you surprised, Chili, how quickly you guys passed that $150,000 goal? Because you zoomed past that in like 3 days.
Yeah, I was. We were shocked. We could not believe it. We kept talking. It was like, oh my God, oh my God. It was a whole bunch of oh my God. It was, you know, very, very surreal. And people, you know, were pledging twice and all that. Like, this is crazy. And, you know, again, it just kind of lets us know that people really want to hear some new music from us. And, you know, I mean, we're so excited, and we just can't wait to go in the studio and what we call the lab, so to speak, and get busy, you know? And trust me, we will not put out anything that is not to the standards that people will hold us in. You know what I mean? We're not going to put out crap at all. So we're taking this very seriously. Again, the fans are completely involved the whole ride, and which is very different, you know? No one has ever done it quite like this, you know, and we've always stepped outside of the box from the moment we hit the scene with Ain't Too Proud to Bed, condoms everywhere, you know, we're just that kind of group. So
Are we going to see names from TLC's past when it comes to the production of this album? Like, are we going to see the Dallas Austins and the Candy Barresses and Jermaine Dupriez?
You know what? I know Dallas Austin is completely on board. I haven't spoken to JD, Jermaine Dupriez, and Candy, but they're definitely welcome. You know, we would love to have them on the album, work with them again. And, you know, I mean, we're really excited about Ron Fair, who is on as executive producer. I mean, I've been wanting to work with that genius of a guy for many years. And so I guess this time the stars were aligned and we were able to, you know, get with him, and he wants to be on the project. So I'm just so excited. I can't wait to go in and see what magic we come up with.
I've always wanted to ask you this, especially because, you know, you have so many hits. Do you have a favorite song, Chili? Like, is Creep your jam, or is it like an album cut?
You know what? It's funny because Hat to the Back was a single, but the original version, the album version, which is my favorite version, was not the single or with the video. It was the remix that JD did, which was great, but I just fell in love with the original. But that's my favorite song. And so, I mean, it's not our biggest song, but I love the feel of it. Lisa's raps were, I mean, it was just my favorite. She just, oh my God, it was amazing. Everything she was saying, it totally was on describing us as a group, and then dealing with guys that kind of want you to, you know, be something else, to be more girly, so to speak. And it was just kind of like a blueprint to how we are. And I love that song for so many reasons.
Hanging out with us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Chili from Grammy Award-winning supergroup TLC. Make sure to check out their Facebook page, Official TLC, which has the direct link to their record-breaking Kickstarter campaign. Now, Chili, I'm sure a lot of people will agree with me when I say that TLC was a complete game changer in the 90s and the early 2000s. Now, during those years, did you have any idea the impact that you were having not only on urban kids from American cities, but on kids and young adults from around the world? Because if we use me as an example, I was this little white kid from a farm in Montreal, Canada, and you made me feel like I could do anything, including wearing baggy pants to school.
So, yes.
Did you feel that love from around?
I love that. Oh my God, that's fantastic.
Yeah, trust me, I wanted to be the fourth member of the group. So, so did you guys feel that impact at Chili? Like, obviously, you know, you have so many fans from your home country, but did you know, just like I said, I was this little white girl and I just love you guys and I wanted to be you guys. Did you feel that love from around the world?
You know what? Every time we were on tour, you know, we did tour in Canada, especially like the Hammer tour and everything. We came through there and we saw a lot of some of the fans that were kind of dressed like us. And so to see that, and we had just, you know, gotten started, we were like, wow, you know. And what it does is, you know, when fans come up and they talk to you, because we're very approachable. We're not the kind of celebrities that, you know, if security is there, like they already know, like people come up to us as long as no one's being aggressive or anything like that. But other than that, you can come up to us and talk to us. You can hug, the whole thing. And when fans express how certain songs help them through a situation and help change their lives or, you know, especially females, so, you know, we represent the girls, you know, not wanting to dress a certain way because you just don't feel comfortable like that. You know, you can do something else and, you know, having that self-esteem, kind of like the thing you just said, it really kind of gives the stamp of approval on what our mission was. And our mission was to always continue to be ourselves and hope that, you know, speaking from our point of view was being a voice for so many. And it just, you know, it just makes you feel good and lets you know that you're doing the right stuff. You know, and because it's receptive and people want more of it. It's just amazing to me, you know, and because we love that kind of reaction. You know what I'm saying? And because I just feel like even to this day, you know, if young girls come up to me or any woman or whatever, and they talk about certain things, I'm always about helping them to feel good about themselves and knowing that they're beautiful no matter, you know, what size, what age, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you're gorgeous. And so, and I tell people that, and because I think that's important.
I would say, I know a lot of people think that the Spice Girls were the first girl power group. I think you guys are. Would you agree?
Yeah, we came out first.
You go, girl.
They came out after us. And as a matter of fact, I remember a video. I don't remember which video it was. But maybe they were going to an award show. And I think it was Scary Spice had on a top that was almost identical to the top I had on that we used to wear all the time, especially in the Digging On You video. I kind of got a little upset. I was like, wait a minute, she's trying to check my style.
Awesome.
Oh my God. I was like, it was so funny. I said, yeah, as long as she knows where she got it from, I inspired that look. You know what I mean? But it's funny because I think that Salt and Pepper, when they came out with Let's Talk About Sex and stuff, you know, they kind of was tapping into that whole thing, you know, just talking about things that are very important that are really, people are nervous to talk about. And we kind of jumped on and just took it to the whole next level. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So
now I have to say this. I think any fan of TLC, any true fan of TLC would say that you, Chili, are the heart and soul of the group, because I've seen so many interviews with you and you always seem so passionate about the group and what you ladies have accomplished. Do you feel that you are the heart in a way of TLC, and how important is TLC to you? Because I remember watching a scene from T-Boz's reality show, and I think it was when, you know, she was thinking about moving out west and all that kind of stuff, and you were worried about like where her head was at, and I just feel like mm-hmm. you always know TLC is like your foundation.
Yeah, I have to, you know, I would say that. It's funny because I, you know, even when Lisa was alive, I would tell them, I would say, I love this group more than y'all do. Like, I'm more of a fan than you guys are. Like, I was like, if I was not in this group, I would totally be a diehard TLC fan. And only because of, you know, just, again, the things that we represent and how, you know, we're not fake. We are so real. And just certain things are very important to us, and we put it out there. You know, we're not afraid of that. And it's funny because I do remember it was before we recorded our last album. We all had a solo deal, and I had just signed, you know, the contract for my solo deal. And I don't know, it just hit me. I was like, we got to do one more album. I don't know. I just felt that. And I called my manager. I called the girls, I call LA, and thank God we kind of went in and made an attempt to do it, because that was the last with Lisa anyway, you know. And I mean, I had no premonition or anything like that that something bad was going to happen, but I just felt like we needed to record again and you know, get back together and all that stuff. Not that we were broken up, but you know, everybody's kind of about to do their own thing. And so, I don't know, I really have so much love and compassion for what we stand for, you know, and I believe in it. So I think that's why I go so hard for my group. I think I always will.
I think you always will too. You see it in your eyes. So I think you're good to go. You brought up Lisa. I have to ask you about that. Obviously it's almost been 13 years since she's been gone. Does it feel like it was just yesterday? And also, I remember seeing, I think it was your first appearance, you know, months after at an award show after she had passed. And again, the pain in your eyes and in Tion's eyes, did you think the group was going to go forward? Like, were you guys just in shock for so long?
Yeah, we were definitely in shock for a very long time. So much for me that I could not, I still spoke about her in the present. I couldn't speak. It took me many years to talk about her, like in the past, like past tense. It was just, I couldn't do it. And I felt like, you know what, if this is how I have to do and to deal with the grief, then I'll do that. You know what I mean? And so, and it was just, I never felt any kind of heartbreak like that, you know, because you don't expect anything like that. You know, we always assume that we're going to live to be, you know, well in our 70s and 80s and stuff like that. And tomorrow, not even the rest of the day is promised to you, you know, but we're not wired to think like that. So when something unexpected happens, you know, like losing a member, a sister, it's devastating. And, you know, we didn't even get a chance to grieve properly. We were, you know, we had to go back and finish the album. And it was just, that whole project was just very sad. It was just really, 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 really not a good time.
If Left Eye, you know, were still here in person, what do you think she would think of the Kickstarter campaign?
Oh, my gosh. She probably would have done it first by herself. I'm serious. She would have been like, you know, I can just hear her now saying, y'all, I did this and we need to do this together. Blah, blah. I mean, she was just, to me, always ahead when it came to certain things. You know, we all are creative and bring a lot to the table. And we always tell people that, you know, Lisa was, as far as her thought process, she would think of things that were way out, and we'd be like, okay, well, let's take this one amazing thing, but those other things might be a little too much. Let's bring it down. You know, so I think we were each other's balance, which was great, and it worked for the group, you know. And I always tell people, too, you know, if Lisa was here and we have Twitter, she would have more Twitter followers than Katy Perry and Taylor Swift put together. She would.
I think she would
have been that person. I know this. I know this. Her Instagram, I mean, oh, my God, because she's just extra edgy and would just do things and for a reaction sometimes, you know. And see, I'm very, I won't call myself safe. I'm just very, I'm a little bit more reserved when it comes to, you know, some things. But yeah, she would own Twitter.
I think she would. I definitely think she would own Twitter. And, you know, just one last question about her. I've always wanted to know, again, since she's been gone, like, I see you and T-Boz out there doing your thing. And I've always wondered, does it feel like when you're on stage, obviously you guys have become accustomed to her not being there, but do you constantly feel like there's like an arm or a leg missing?
Yeah, definitely feels like a few toes are missing. You know, you can still dance, but it's like, you know, you kind of have to get used to this new way. So, you know, this is our new normal. And Tion says that all the time, you know, TLC is T-Boz and Chili. And, you know, we don't have a new member in this group because we don't want one. And we always, I don't know, it's just something about the three of us. I mean, first of all, no one could ever fill the shoes of Lisa, ever. And, you know, if it was something that we ever thought about, it wouldn't be about somebody filling the shoes, like, what can they bring to the table? But that chemistry that the three of us share, T-Boz and I have that chemistry, and it's our responsibility to continue on with just us and you know, carry Lisa's legend on, you know, and that's what we do, you know. And trust me, if any of us are going to be replaced, when Pebbles kicked me out of the group, they would have been able to replace me, and that didn't happen. And if Lisa was going to, you know, ever have been replaced, we would have done it after the fire, after she burned the house down. So, you know, none of that happened. We always stuck together, and because, you know, it was just meant to be with the three and now the two.
Now, you guys are heading out on tour with NKOTB and Nelly for the main event tour. You're coming to my neck of the woods in Montreal on June the 30th. I have to ask you this, if I've done my homework correctly, this is your first tour or your big tour since Fan Mail. Are you excited to be hitting like huge arenas again, Chili, and having like over 10,000 fans? Like in some of these places, it's going to be 15, 16, 17,000 people screaming at you.
Let me tell you something. It's a dream. So being on the road and a tour like this, it means so much. Like, new kids have no idea, you know, what, I don't even know if I could ever explain it to them in words, like how thankful I am that they wanted us to be on tour with them. You know, I'm so happy that we all were on this mixtape festival together because they got a chance to see our performance. And, you know, we got a phone call a few weeks later and they wanted us to go on tour with them. And so, and I'm so proud of them too, because, you know, it's not easy for groups that's been around, you know, for a long time, and then you go away and you come back and be able to sell out like that, you know, because I mean, I'm speaking of them and their catalog and stuff and the loyalty that their fans have for them. It's just, it's a blessing, you know? And so the fact that they've been doing this for a few years now and is doing it successfully, I mean, kudos to them. That's so amazing. And it's very rare. And I think that too, like even when our TLC biopic came out, we got a whole new generation of fans. You know, these young kids have discovered TLC. And it's funny that this generation now has discovered this new love, found love for the 90s, you know, like 90s music, 90s TV shows, all of that stuff, you know. And it's funny to see, because I feel like those were the most fun times, because, you know, Keon and I talk about it all the time. And it's funny, I was on the phone with Missy Elliott the other day, and we were just talking about how when we were all out, when, you know, somebody was coming out, like if Missy in a new video, whatever, or us or whomever, you know, you were so nervous because everybody worked so hard at putting out good stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, it was healthy competition. You know what I mean? We never looked at female acts as competition. Never. Always the guys. Always guys. So we looked at boy groups like, I see what they're doing. All right, we got to kick their butt. Like, that's how we looked at it. You know, other girls would be like, yeah, do it. You know, but the boys, well, it was like competition time, you know?
That's amazing. So, it's so great to hear that you have love for your fellow 90s groups, because, I mean, I'm a kid from the 90s, and I think that's the most magical time in music history for me. I just think you guys were on point. There was such great music coming out, like you know, Janet, Whitney, like all of you guys, and like Missy. Like, it was just amazing. Do you feel that the 90s, and I find sometimes the 90s gets poo-pooed a bit. Do you feel like people don't respect the 90s as much as they should?
You know, I think maybe not necessarily so much they don't respect it. Maybe they just kind of jump onto what's current, mm-hmm. and they think that's hot. And not that some of it's not, because some of it is, but most of it is not, especially like about 5-6 years ago. Like, some of the stuff I hear on the radio, I'm like, are you kidding me? And I'm, you know, I'm a true performer. I I'm going to give some good music credit where credit is due. And I was not hearing that. And so, you know, even like with, you know, Katy Perry having Missy on, you know, the Super Bowl performance, and that moment, it's like and of course Missy killed it. Everybody is now like pulling up her stuff and downloading and all this. And again, that's 90s music, you know? So I think that them rediscovering, you know, that type of music in that era, and just lyrically what everybody was talking about, and just how in the videos people really performed for you, they're falling in love with that, which is great, because I think that's why people are, and not just, you know, I'm not talking about people that grew up with us that really knows about TLC and New Kids and all that stuff, but, you know, once the younger people have discovered this, they're hungry for it, so then, you know, they want to see you in concert. So, you know, I just can't wait to look out in the audience, because we've always been blessed to have fans from all age groups. You know, we have the little ones and people that are old enough to be our grandparents that love us for whatever reason, whether it's Unpretty or Waterfalls, you know, those type of songs that really touch you deeply. And so I just can't wait to look out and see the pool of fans. I might do like a little crowd dive. So I always say I really want to do that, and I've been nervous to do it, but I think I'm going to do it on this tour at some point.
I want you to do it in Montreal. Will you please do it in Montreal?
You better catch me. I'm very light. I'm not heavy, so that's a good thing.
I will be there, I promise. And I have to ask you, coming to Montreal, have you ever had poutine? You have to have poutine when you come here.
What is that?
It is French fries with gravy and curd cheese. And I know that you are a healthy woman. I understand this. But you have to promise me that you will try this. You have to promise me when you come to town. And
oh,
I will take
my God.
You. I will take you when
okay.
you come to Montreal.
I promise I can eat two fries then. I can do that just to get the taste in and say that I've done it.
Excellent. That's great. And before I let you go, because I could talk to you for hours, but I know you got to go. I know that you guys are, you know, on the Kickstarter campaign. This is the final album.
Right.
But Chili, if this goes well and things, you know, just blow up again, I know they will. Would you guys consider doing something else down the line?
Well, the one thing that we want everybody to know is that, you know, just because we say, we're letting you know this is the last album, we're not saying that we're not going to perform anymore. You know what I mean? We're still going to be out there working and doing shows and stuff like that. And hopefully God will bless us, you know, in the studio to come up with some real magical stuff to add to our catalog. And, that, you know, will definitely take us on through some more years and stuff. So, I mean, I'll never say never. I've definitely learned to not say that. You know what I mean? So you never know what's going to happen. And I'm always hopeful that, you know, we'll be in a position to always continue on in whatever way it is, you know, because Lord knows that I love being in this group and being on that stage entertaining you guys. So, awesome. You know, with that said, hopefully, you know, it'll just kind of continue on in every way possible.
And if I can put your TLC fans on my back for just a second, I want to thank you for everything that you guys have done and for continuing on, because we love you. And just having
thank
you guys
you.
Back on stage, it's such a joy, and you bring so much to us. So thank you so much for that and for being on my show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. I love you guys back. I really do.
That's Chili from Grammy Award-winning group TLC. Again, make sure to check out their Facebook page, Official TLC, which has the direct link to their record-breaking Kickstarter campaign.
Hey, what's up? This is Chili from TLC, and you're hanging out on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Little
It's the Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
We're very happy to welcome to the show an Emmy Award-winning actress who has legions of fans after portraying the character of Sharon Collins Newman on the number one daytime drama, The Young and the Restless, since 1994. Sharon Case, thank you for joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly, and hello everyone out there in the podcast world. Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be doing the interview.
Excellent. And before we delve into Y&R stuff, I just wanted to start. I love to let people sort of have an idea where artists start and get the bug. So did you know as a child that you were going to head towards a career in acting?
I think I knew. I mean, it was hard to say, but when I was a kid, I was into dance. I was a ballerina forever. And when I was really young, I used to choreograph these little shows with my girlfriends. We would sing and dance and put on shows and make our parents watch this. And I'm sure all kids do that. So I don't know if that meant that I was going to be an actress, but I guess it was the early signs of that.
Now, you've been on Y&R for a long time, but you actually had stints on General Hospital as well as The World Turns before you kicked over to Young and the Restless. Were you actually a fan of daytime before you joined the genre, or was it sort of new to you?
No, I was a fan. My mother watched soap operas. When I was a kid, she was a stay-at-home mom for a good long period of time before she went to work. But we watched Days of Our Lives, General Hospital, and Another World. And I think Young and the Restless was probably just getting started then, because I was very young at the time. And but I remember her watching them, and, you know, I was aware of them. I watched a little bit. So I already, you know, had a feel for these shows and you know, a lot of the characters.
How did you get your chance to start playing Sharon Collins back in 1994? Were you sought out by the show to audition?
Let's see. Well, I know my agents called me for the audition. I'm not sure if they had submitted me or I was asked to come in. It was so long ago, I can't remember how that went. But I had just finished up shooting Valley of the Dolls, the primetime series Valley of the Dolls, and we had shot about three seasons. We shot three seasons within one season. So we basically just worked nonstop for months. And then we went on hiatus. And while I was on hiatus was when I tried out for Young and the Restless. And at the time, the Young and the Restless hired me to play Sharon, but it was on the understanding that when my hiatus was over, I would have to leave and go back to Valley of the Dolls. So that seemed fine with everyone. And I started playing Sharon and I really loved working there. I was sad to have to leave, but then the Valley of the Dolls didn't get picked up. We found out sort of late in the year, and so then that was that. I stayed with Young and the Restless, and here I am.
And we're so happy to have you there. I'm such a huge fan of you and your character. And I wanted to ask you, did you have any idea, you know, I would say within the first year after you knew you weren't going to go back to the other show, did you think that you were going to be an integral part of the canvas and stay around for a while?
Well, you know, coming onto the show the way that I did, I wasn't sure I would be there more than 3 months at first. But then once I stayed and things got rolling, and I could see that maybe happening because Sharon was with Nick. And because Nick was, you know, the son of Victor and Nikki, I could see that that might turn into Sharon and Nick one day being, you know, like Victor and Nikki. But I didn't know, obviously, for sure. I mean, Nick would be. He's their son, but who knows, you know, what would happen with Nick and his life as he, you know, grows up. But it just stuck. Sharon seemed to really stick with Nick, and thank God, because it's been a really great journey. And I mean, I certainly hoped for that. I could foresee that possibly happening, and lucky enough it did.
Now, speaking of the character of Nick and all that sort of stuff, You've had so many love interests on the show, but like you mentioned, he's sort of the one that you always come back to, especially in the recent storyline with what's been going on. And you've grown up with, I would say, Joshua Morrow in a way, because it seems like you both came on the show right around the same time. Are you great friends off screen as well? Because you have such great chemistry on screen, and no wonder you guys are like a super couple on Y&R.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we are good friends off screen. You know, we don't hang out a lot outside of the studio. Joshua has his family, and I have, you know, a busy life as well, but at the studio, we get along really well. We laugh a lot. We have a terrific time. We do spend time together when we shoot on location, when we go and do press tours. And, you know, we've always had a lot of fun. We had a great time in Monte Carlo the other year. That was a blast. A lot of cast members went. And we all have such a fabulous time when we're together outside of the studio.
Can you actually speak to us about the team vibe? Because I just know how important it is working at a radio station, you know, to sort of get along with everybody, especially because it's just, I find it's different than working in an office. Not that it's more important, but it's just different, especially when you've got creative people going on. So what's it like, the cast and the crew? What could you sort of tell, you know, your fans that might not know what it's like a day in the life at YNR?
You know, it's usually a real kick. It's a lot of fun. We've all known each other and worked together for years. So we do feel like we're close friends. And, you know, even though we really don't see a lot of each other outside of work, we're at work a lot. And a lot happens there. You know, these scenes we shoot are sometimes very intense. So we sort of feel like we've been through a lot together in a way. And we really care about each other. I'm happy to see everyone every day when I show up. I'm delighted to work with them. We care about each other. We're interested in each other's lives. We do a lot of laughing and joking around, probably more than we should, but you know, we enjoy spending time together. So it's a fun day. You know, I start out in hair and makeup, and that room is always a silly room. In fact, on any production I've ever been on, the hair and makeup room is always very famous for being ridiculous. That's where we don't really have like a green room, which is a separate room for actors to hang out in. So when there isn't one, the actors tend to use hair and makeup, and it's anything goes in there. I mean, we'll blast music and it'll be a dance party one morning, or just whatever happens. We'll watch crazy YouTube videos. We're always screaming and laughing. It's a loud room, and that's really fun. It gets the day going, sort of gets your energy moving while you're starting out in hair and makeup. And then we meet with the director and go over the scenes. And probably within a few hours of arriving at the studio, I'll be shooting. We start shooting at 8:30 in the morning. And so it's a fun day.
Joining us on the show is Emmy Award-winning actress Sharon Case from The Young and the Restless. Make sure to follow her on her Twitter, at Sharon L. Case. Can we speak about your character, Sharon, and the fact that she's had this long-standing feud with the character of Phyllis, played for the longest time by Michelle Stafford, and now more recently with Gina? Did you know very early on that you and Michelle had ridiculous chemistry? Because it was amazing. And now it seems like, even though Michelle is gone, you've managed to pick it up again with Gina.
Yeah, it's great that it's just picked right up with Gina. That's fabulous. I'm so happy about that. And I'd followed Gina's work for a long time. I've always known she was a great actress, and the character that she played previously was similar to Phyllis. So I knew that she sort of had it in her to play that kind of role. But, you know, I worked on the show for years before Sharon and Phyllis ever even met each other. So I had no idea. I would have never guessed what would happen if you put these two characters in a room together. I don't think anybody could have. I think it just surprised us all how that rivalry worked, and it just kept working. I remember when they first told me that Nick was going to be having an affair, and we weren't sure who it was going to be yet. And then they finally told me Phyllis, and I thought, Phyllis, well, I'll be in a triangle with Phyllis. I just couldn't imagine how that would go. But, you know, we'll see. And look at what came of that.
That's
it's
amazing.
Really, really amazing.
And, you know, I wanted to ask you, being a fan of your character for the longest time, I feel like sometimes you get picked on. Your character gets picked on way more than it should. Does it ever get frustrating for you? I know, obviously, you can separate yourself. You know that this is part of your job and that's going to happen. But I sometimes find the characters of Genoa City always pick on you more than other people. They never turn the finger back on themselves. Does it drive you a bit nuts sometimes?
You know, for a few years it did, but I think only because at that time, you know, I was trying to make Sharon a stronger character. At some point, you know, she started out on the show as a high school student. She had to become an adult at some point to really grow up and change. So I wanted to make her more opinionated and stronger. And there was a few years of struggle in that transition. But I know the fans I see on Twitter all the time, they get frustrated that Sharon's always dumped on by everyone. And I really don't know how that ended up being her MO, except maybe because when Sharon started, she instantly had this rivalry with Nikki, and Nikki was always down on her. And that worked, and that was fun, and people to this day still like our relationship. But I think in these days, when Sharon and Nikki fight, Sharon comes from a stronger point of view, and that's something that I really forced and added to that rivalry, and I think it makes it more interesting. But you're right, anytime something goes wrong, it's always Sharon's fault in Genoa City, and I don't know why it gets written that way. I guess each character kind of does have their own MO, you know, Victor and and even Nick, I mean, Phyllis, and that's just sort of what our personalities are. And so I guess the writers just stick with that formula. But, I mean, you never know how things will change, so we'll see.
Do you ever think your character and Eric's character, Victor, will turn it around? Because it was such a beautiful relationship that the two of you had for the longest time, where he looked out for her constantly, even when no one else would. And obviously the last couple of years it's been super contentious between the two. I know I long for you guys to sort of be back in a good place. Do you think that eventually that'll turn around and come back, or do you think the damage is done?
It's hard to say. I think a lot of that, you know, obviously happened when Sharon took over Newman Enterprises. And that was a period in Sharon's life where she became very different, very strong. She was, really abrasive and was running and leading that company. And she did a lot of things that were out of character for her. And you know what? I really wouldn't want to see her behave like that all the time. It's not quite her, but it was amazing to be able to do that with her for a period of time. And then, of course, they later explained all this as mental illness, which I loved that we discovered Sharon had an illness. A lot of damage was done in that time. I don't know, if these two will ever see, eye to eye again, if they'll rekindle their old relationship. It was a wonderful relationship that Sharon and Victor had as father-daughter, and it really worked when Nikki was always down on Sharon and Victor was the supporter. That was really fabulous. I really, it's hard to say what I would prefer. I mean, I like that they've turned into rivals. I think that it makes it different and interesting as opposed to what it always was for years. But I think it would be interesting to change it back as well and have them find some kind of truce between them and start caring about each other again. I think that would also be a nice story to watch. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, but, I think that would be great.
You mentioned dealing with the mental illness on the show. I wanted to get your take on taking on that responsibility, because I remember a few years back, I was fortunate to be able to speak with Eileen Davidson when she was going through the breast cancer storyline, and we talked about the responsibility of handling that, because obviously so many women go through that. Your situation similar, obviously a mental illness this time around. Was it hard for you, Sharon, to sort of take that on your back and portray it as accurately as possible?
No, it wasn't. I think that, I had already sort of been playing Sharon in that direction. She'd been written in that direction for years. So I had sort of already been playing Sharon for years, acting off. You remember she went through this kleptomania stint and, then she set the house on fire. They write a lot of crazy stuff for me. And so I've kind of been used to playing that throughout the years. And I can remember back when Sharon and Nick were married and they had just had Noah, that Sharon had little strange bouts of bizarre behavior even back then. So it's kind of always been there. We just finally figured out what it is and gave it its true definition. But it didn't mean I had to start changing how I performed. I had already been playing her this way for years. And also, when I was on As the World Turns, I played Debbie, who was manic depressive. And prior to that, when I graduated from acting school, the thesis scene that I was given was a woman who had mental illness. So I had done a lot of study about mental illness when I was in school. In fact, it was my thesis, so I didn't really ever struggle with it. It was a strong point for me.
Do you get a lot of mail, Sharon, when it comes to that? Like, have you had fans reach out to you and say that, they go through something similar? And how do you respond to those messages if you do?
I do. I do get a lot of messages like that. Usually they're encouraging, and, I just thank people for their encouraging words, and they tell me that, they can relate to this. They tell me how we're portraying Sharon is exactly right or how it's not. And I appreciate their feedback.
How important are the fans for you guys? Because I know, like, for the longest time, again, just sort of covering entertainment industry, I think it's different between daytime and evening television. And I think for the longest time, people are really attracted to daytime, actors, because you do become one of the family, because you're not on just once a week, you're on 5 days a week. So what's it like having fan support? And now with the advent of social media, being able to respond to them directly, it's not like you're just getting, handwritten notes through the show itself.
Well, first of all, I love that social media has connected us to the fans. I mean, a lot of people say what they will about social media, but that connection that the actors got with the fans through Twitter is amazing, because we shoot without an audience. So it's just us there every day. We don't get a lot of interaction with the fans unless we, you know, go out and do a press tour. And, you know, that's limited to who shows up at the tour and what city we're in. Twitter has allowed us to reach out to everyone and really hear feedback from everyone. So I think we all are really happy about that. And daytime is on every day. So I do think that the fans maybe connect more with daytime dramas because they do see us every day. Of course, you might develop more of a connection than seeing someone maybe once a week and maybe only, you know, 20 times a year because that's all the season went. So I love that about this genre. I love working all the time. You know, I love the volume that we shoot. I think I would just fall asleep if I weren't shooting, you know, 150 shows a year.
I actually wanted to ask you about that because if we go behind the scenes for a sec, I've always personally been so impressed with daytime actors because I think a lot of people don't realize just how much dialogue you guys have to get through, you know, on a daily basis. You don't get, you know, 27 takes to get it right. Do you find that as the years have gone on, you guys are getting more respect? Because I know for the longest time, I feel like people are like, oh, you're just on daytime. But really, I think you guys are the true champs.
Well, thank you. I mean, we do have a lot to do. We have a lot to memorize. It can be challenging for an actor when they first start working that way, but I actually prefer it. I like that challenge. It's not difficult for me. It's not too much. It doesn't bother me at all. In fact, any less than that, it, like I said, makes me fall asleep. So I love that energy that it adds to your workday, that you have so much to do, so many scenes and all of this dialogue and so many different performances and even just in one day or let alone in a week. I love doing that. It kind of reminds me of, you know, working hard in acting class. But I think that people are starting to relate prime time to daytime a little bit more so because what we're all realizing is that the prime time soap operas are soap operas also. If you really look at them, you know, except that they're on once a week instead of every day, they're still these serial dramas. It's a soap opera. What a lot of people watch in the prime time is soap opera. So I think now that people are really realizing that, we're starting to be more compared to primetime dramas and or primetime compared to the daytime dramas. So, and I love that because, I mean, it really is doing the same thing. We're telling similar stories with similar characters, and it's just as entertaining. And like I said, the only except is that we are on every day and thank God we are.
As someone who's been on or, you know, on daytime for such a long time, has it been scary watching all the daytime shows sort of being whittled away over the last several years? Because I remember in the 90s, there was like 15 or 16 soaps, you know, in the U.S. alone. And now it's down to like four in 2015. You know, All My Children's gone. Guiding Light is gone. One Life to Live is gone. Was that hard to watch your colleagues from other shows and just the shows itself go away?
It was. But I mean, I personally read a couple of things into it. And that is, you know, three of the shows in New York were, you know, all owned by the same conglomerate. And when the financial crisis hit the U.S. and the world, you know, a lot of companies had to downsize. And I see those three shows were canceled because of that whole phenomenon, not simply because nobody likes those shows or those shows weren't good enough or they didn't have enough ratings. You know, they might still be standing today had there not been such a crisis in the world. And the ABC show that went off the air, that was, you know, an experiment done that I think a lot was learned from. So, and what was learned was that, you know, when you take a daytime drama off the air, the fans get pretty upset. And so I'm not fearful that the shows, that this is going to continue happening. The other thing that I've noticed is over the years, there are periods of time where you've got 15 daytime dramas, and then it'll go back down to four or five, and then it'll expand back out to 12. And this kind of just ebbs and flows over the decades, depending on how, you know, how much money people are spending in advertising. And, you know, networks tend to focus on different genres in different periods of time, different decades. Sometimes dramas are the hot thing, and then reality shows are the hot thing, and then half hour comedies are the hot thing. And these things always come back around again and again. So I think it's just a cycle.
Can you talk about the fact that you have just celebrated, I know last year, your 20th anniversary on the show? What does it feel like to have reached that milestone and to be a character that people love and want to stay on the canvas?
Very flattering. And also surreal. I almost can't really embrace it that it's true that I've been on the show 20 years because you know, no matter what you do for a living, you can almost never say that you did this or worked there or did anything for 20 years. And so to be able to say that is really amazing. It's so wonderful to have, for me to have accomplished that. And it's also just surreal because, I mean, who would have ever thought that they would be doing something like that their whole lives? And I mean, 20 years, yeah, this year I'll hit 21. And you know, hopefully many more to come. You know, as Young and the Restless is doing well, the ratings are doing well, the fans seem to like it, so I guess we're here to stay for a while.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about this. I know it's been, you know, almost a couple of years now since the amazing Gene Cooper passed away, but I wanted to ask you, I was fortunate to ask Doug Davidson the same thing. We as fans know just on our end how important she was to the show. And again, if you sort of are a fan and you sort of read behind the scenes stuff, you know that she was a matriarch for you guys. How difficult was it to sort of deal with her real life passing and then trying to move forward as a team?
Well, I mean, Jeannie is thought of and adored every day. We, you know, her dressing room door has is center in the middle of our main hallway and has a sign on it that says this room belonged to Jeannie Cooper, and the door was always open. And it's true. It always was. It was open to anybody who wanted to come in, and we, you know, we see her room. We have her photos everywhere in the hair and makeup room. She's sort of there with us in spirit every day still. So we've kept her alive in our minds and our hearts, and she's just everywhere you look in that building, there's something that reminds you of her or makes you feel that she's still there. And I think we all feel that way.
Last question. You won an Emmy Award back in 1999, and I remember watching that show, and I actually just rewatched the YouTube clip because I wanted to remember exactly what was going on when you won. What did it feel like to win it then and to sort of look back on it now all these years later and know that you can actually be announced as, you know, Sharon Case Emmy Award winner?
I don't know that I look back at it and think, hey, I can. It's been a long time since I have, so you never know. I don't count on that happening. But that it's funny that you watched the scenes. You watched the scenes that I submitted for the Emmy that year?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because I was trying to remember what I submitted, and I think it was some sort of an argument or discussion between Sharon and Nick, and she had been acting out lately, and he suggested that she was crazy. And it was the first time that it was ever said out loud, and that was a long time ago, and that was sort of when Sharon started acting crazy now and then. And so, yeah, that's what I remember the storyline being at the time, Sharon being crazy. That was, you know, amazing to win the Emmy. I did not expect it that year. You know, since then I've submitted a lot of other work that I was very proud of. It was certainly far and away more challenging. But, you know, winning the trophy is a real, you know, roll of the dice. You never know.
Awesome. Sharon, thank you so much for your time. It's been so great to speak to you, and we hope you stay on Young and the Restless forever.
Oh, thank you. I hope so, too. Thank you.
That's Emmy Award-winning actress Sharon Case from The Young and the Restless. Make sure to follow her on Twitter, at Sharon L. Case.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you so much for joining us this week as we took a look back at some of our favorite memories from the past year. I am so grateful to all of our guests for being so gracious with their time and knowledge, as well as to you for making the time to listen. Before I let you go, here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time from William Arthur Ward. 4 steps to achievement. Plan purposefully, prepare prayerfully, proceed positively, pursue persistently. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful week. Any comments or questions, Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. You and I'll talk soon.